leisure flyers think current airport screenings are inadequate. It turns out the TSA's scanners can save and transmit images after all. And Loran C will go dark in the U.S. next month. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, January 13th, 2010. Now, this one's a little hard to believe, but in the latest National State of the American Traveler survey conducted by destination analysts, only 1 in 5 leisure travelers believes there is adequate security screening at airports. In other findings, travelers are also 7 times more likely to prefer full-body scanning technology to pat-downs. In a follow-up question, DA found that 57% of travelers are either comfortable or extremely comfortable with the scans, and only about 16% respond uncomfortable or extremely uncomfortable. Aaron Francis Cummings, managing partner of Destination Analysts, says the study found an encouraging trend for 2010. Quote, "We expect to see modest increases in domestic leisure travel and spending in the upcoming year. Despite economic pressures and security threats and uncertainty, Americans are more upbeat about their travel prospects than they were 6 months ago," unquote. The survey is conducted twice a year. Meanwhile, remember when privacy advocates worried out loud that images from your full-body scan at the airport might wind up on the internet? Well, TSA assured us on its website that, quote, "the machines have zero storage capability," unquote. Or maybe you've seen the video playing at the airport in which TSA asserts, quote, "the system has no way to save, transmit, or print the image," unquote. Well, it turns out TSA is not telling the truth. EPIC, the Electronic Privacy Information Center, tells CNN that the machines have a test mode in which the images can not only be stored, but transmitted. EPIC director Mark Rodenberg says that opens the possibility of abuse by insiders or even hackers. EPIC obtained the information on the machines through a Freedom of Information Act request. Rodenberg is critical of what he calls slick promotion by the TSA. Quote, "But if you look at the actual technical specifications and you read the vendor contracts, you come to understand that these machines are capable of doing far more than the TSA has let on," unquote. TSA has responded by saying adequate safeguards are in place. The officer viewing the images cannot see the passenger being scanned. The machines are not being networked and cannot be hacked. No cell phones or other photographic devices are allowed in the rooms. And violators are subject to serious discipline or removal. And that's all well and good, but YouTube is full of bootleg concert videos from venues where no cameras are allowed. And TSA reportedly has declined to cooperate in the prosecution of its workers when they're caught stealing at airports, citing security concerns. What could possibly go wrong? A couple of years ago, there was a debate underway about whether Loran should be preserved as a backup to GPS for aircraft. It looks like the final word is out. The 2010 DHS Appropriations Act disallowed any further funding for the system, and the U.S. Coast Guard has announced that Loran C will go dark on February 8th. The decision will not affect U.S. participation in international coverage, which is mandated by treaty. Loran was originally developed for maritime interests and offered accuracy of about a quarter mile. It has been almost entirely supplanted now by GPS. In its announcement, the Coast Guard says it understands that Loran C is still used by a small segment of the public and that those users will have to shift to GPS or other systems, but says continued use of limited resources to operate Loran C is no longer prudent use of taxpayer funds. Boy, if only that same yardstick could be held up against the TSA. Up next on ANN, NTSB now requires several types of incidents to be reported. The FAA warns turbine rotorcraft operators about icing. And the A400M is still flying, despite hints it might be canceled. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for January 13th. I'm Paul Plack. There's lots more detail in these next two stories than I could cram into an Aero Briefing, so I'm going to encourage you to visit aero-news.net and check them both out in greater detail. Both are dated January 12th on the website. First, the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board is amending its regulations governing the reporting of accidents and incidents. Modifications to a rule change published in October appeared in the Federal Register last Thursday. They'll take effect on March 8th. Of special note is that operators will now be required to report some kinds of incidents to the board, even if they don't rise to the definition of accident. These include failures of components and turbines that result in parts exiting anywhere but out the exhaust, loss of any piece of a propeller unless it happens on the ground, flickering or lost function of more than 50% of a glass panel, takeoffs or landings on a taxiway or incorrect runway by an air carrier, and others. The FAA has revised and reissued a special airworthiness information bulletin alerting operators of turboshaft-powered rotorcraft of the possibility of in-flight loss of engine power due to the ingestion of ice and snow. Accumulation of ice and snow can occur in the area of the airframe engine inlet while the rotorcraft is on the ground or in the air. The FAA says there have been accidents and fatalities as a result. The advice includes avoiding prolonged periods of engine idling on the ground, proper use of pillows for the turbine inlets when the aircraft is stored in the cold, and caution when flying in visible moisture at temps below 5 degrees Celsius or 41 Fahrenheit. The program is supposedly on the chopping block, but the first Airbus A400M military transport is still putting hours on the hobs. Eads reports the plane got another 2.4 hours in its third sortie from Seville, Spain, on January 7th. The aircraft, known as MSN-1, has now completed 9 hours and 20 minutes of flying. Test pilot Michael Gagnon became the third pilot to fly the aircraft, supporting Captain Nacho Lombo. Airbus head of flight operations Fernando Alonso also flew on the plane for the first time, acting as flight test engineer. He commented, quote, "The flight program is progressing well, and in the days ahead, now that the operational flight envelope has been cleared, we will be flying regularly, further evaluating the aircraft's handling characteristics and doing initial systems evaluations," unquote. Airbus brass has been talking about scrapping the program, which is years late and billions over budget. The stepped-up flight testing seems to support the hypothesis that such talk is a negotiating tactic to get the original partners to cough up more money for the program. Still ahead, DOT rules that Virgin America is a legitimate U.S. airline. Virgin Atlantic buys its first A330s. And two airline CEOs talk about what oil prices could mean in 2010. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, January 13th. I'm Paul Plack. I want to take a moment for a correction, and I need to apologize to somebody. I closed yesterday's Aero Briefing with a story about the passing of Alabama Hall of Fame member Joe Shannon at the age of 88. I included comments on Joe's life from Hall of Fame chairman Billy Singleton. But my teaser headline earlier said, "Remembering Billy Singleton." Thanks to those of you who caught the error and let me know by email. But more important, apologies to Billy's family. Sorry if I gave you a scare. As far as we know, Billy is still fogging the mirror just fine. Virgin America has passed a review by the U.S. Department of Transportation, which finds that the airline's new ownership structure still leaves majority control in the hands of U.S. citizens. There is pressure from other nations to change the current U.S. rules, but for now, at least 75% of an air carrier's voting stock must be owned or controlled by U.S. citizens. The president and at least two-thirds of the board of directors and managing officers must be U.S. citizens, and the air carrier must be under the actual control of U.S. citizens. In announcing its findings, DOT also dismissed petitions by Alaska Airlines and the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association for a public inquiry into Virgin America's citizenship. Virgin America CEO David Cush commented, quote, "With this behind us, we intend to focus on what we do best, injecting new competition into markets as we grow, creating new jobs, and delivering an unrivaled guest experience," unquote. British-based Virgin Atlantic Airways has bought six Airbus A330-300 long-range aircraft and will be leasing four more from AerCap. They'll be used on routes between the UK, North America, the Caribbean, Africa, and Asia for both business and leisure markets. Virgin Atlantic's A330s will seat up to 270 passengers in three classes, and the airline promises revolutionary onboard cabin innovations in every class. Airline CEO Steve Ridgway said the planes add immense operational flexibility, quote, and at the same time fit in with our commitment to invest in today's most environmentally efficient aircraft, unquote. Virgin already operates six A340-300s and 19 A340-600s and has bought six A380s. And finally today, in a case of be careful what you wish for, airline executives are tempering their expectations of a better 2010 with concerns that economic recovery will also bring higher crude oil prices. The Dallas Morning News reports CEOs Gary Kelly of Southwest Airlines and Gerard Arpey of American Airlines spoke Monday to the Professional Convention Management Association meeting in Dallas, Texas. Kelly told the group, quote, we'd be making a lot of money at $50 a barrel. When you get into the 70s and 80s, it's pretty treacherous territory for us. $100 oil would be a very difficult scenario, given the current revenue environment, unquote. Arpey added, quote, if you had oil go back up, gosh forbid, in the mid-100s, you'd have to have a very significant increase in ticket prices for the airlines to sustain our capacity levels where they are now. Then the question would be, what would that do to demand? Unquote. Both executives criticized increased taxes being levied on airline passengers, saying that costs for airline security should come from the U.S. General Fund. Both also came out against cap and trade. Arpey noted dryly, quote, I'm not enthusiastic about creating a synthetic currency for lawyers and investment bankers to play with, unquote. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, two CEOs who are bullish on 2010, Piper Aircraft's Kevin Gould and Jeppesen's Mark Van Tine. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.